Ignition sequence start. 3, 2, 1.
Welcome back to University, everybody, the podcast where we explore the hard-hitting questions of Earth, existence, and the unknown. I'm AJ Perrin. With me, as always,
Judson Martin.
Was that your phone vibrating, or are you giving yourself a haircut?
Oh, yeah, that was my phone vibrating. I'll throw it away.
Nice. Yeah, guys, today we're going to be talking about Dyson spheres, and we're doing this episode remotely. What's kind of funny about that is the time between remote episodes, it's about a year, right? Because we do them in the summer. But yeah. Man, it doesn't feel like we've done an episode every 2 weeks since last summer.
Well, we haven't.
That it's already next summer.
We didn't do one in the last 2 weeks.
I know. Yeah, we took a break. But the nice thing about a break is that we come back with a bajillion new segments to cover. Today, we're going to be talking about Dyson spheres. We're going to be talking about the man who dreamed them up, what they are, and potentially if we have candidates for them in our own galaxy. But first, we've got a lot of news and, of course, brain gains to cover. So we'll jump into that first. Judd, where do you want to start? You want to go first? You got something?
No, I think you should do all of yours and then I'll do mine.
All right. No, let's do it that way then. Let's look at SpaceX has announced that they have a new EVA suit. EVA stands for extravehicular activity. So this is a spacesuit that you can use in the vacuum of space. It was announced a couple weeks ago. But it's a lot slimmer, if you look at pictures of it, than any other contenders right now from Collins Aerospace or from Axiom. Judd, have you seen pictures of this?
I'm looking at it now. Interesting.
Doesn't it look exactly like the IVA suit?
Oh, this is their EVA. Interesting.
Yeah.
Isn't that it looks a lot like the Collins.
Yeah, I mean, with the white, for sure. It is, so several times more slim. It's built for the Polaris Dawn mission, which is going to take Falcon 9 rocket and a Dragon capsule higher than ever before, so to their limits, and then will perform the first commercial spacewalk 700 kilometers above the Earth. The suit has a couple upgrades from the IVA. It's actually a direct upgrade, which includes zippers for easy access in and out, as well as a heads-up display, which is pretty sci-fi, if you ask me, with like mission-critical information and suit logistics and everything built right into that headset. And then the other big thing is that it can be used for both an IVA and an EVA, so they don't even have to change in and out. So that's just like sci-fi movies, where you can basically go in and out of the spacecraft with the same hardware.
Yeah, I'm sure that'll be... Astronauts are going to like that.
And you don't have to feel like you're being suffocated or that you couldn't get out if somebody helped you. Like, you could get out of this, I presume, on your own, you know?
Yeah. This isn't
which I think is a big fear of mine.
This isn't the one that they got, like, the Hollywood designer for, right? Or whatever.
Wasn't that Prada? Is that right? That Prada did the space or was designing a space?
Yeah, that's right.
I still don't think there's actual pictures of that out. Maybe I'm wrong.
No, it doesn't look like it.
Next in news, I'm going to rip through a couple of these because they're just micro news, like little bulletins. We've got California. I missed this one. I kind of wanted to talk about it last episode. So for a period of about 30 days, I think in March or April, California was exceeding 100% of its demand for energy from renewable sources for periods of up to 6 hours on each of those days, which is pretty boss. I know already right now, 36% of electricity sales in California come from renewables. So this is not just even cool for climate change because it is making renewable energy cheaper in California. I think it's actually more economical now to buy renewables than non-renewables. So
that's cool.
Baller. Yeah. Another bulletin, newest farthest galaxy ever observed. You can pretty much guess which telescope did that, Judd.
Definitely somebody on the ground with an amateur scope.
Yeah, actually it was me.
It was you. It was me. Your, with your what even zoom is that one?
20x. No. It's like 200.
Oh, okay.
Right?
Yeah, I don't remember.
I know I can look at the moon pretty cool, but nothing else. JWST discovers a galaxy 290 million years as it was after the start of the universe. The previous record was 325 million years. And of course, we've heard this story before. Its size and brightness is unexpected for its age. So it is continuing to confuse scientists how it is of this nature at such a young point in its life.
Cool. Yeah, that's awesome. They think it's really young?
Well, so it is young. It is So it formed 290 million years after the start of the Big Bang. That's its age based on its redshift. Its name is Jadis GS Z14. Z14 stands for redshift 14.
Are you sure it's 290 million years after the Big Bang?
Hey, man, I'm reading it right here off BBC.
But you're saying it was formed 290 million years after the Big Bang.
No. So
that's what you said.
We're seeing it as it was 290 million years after the Big Bang.
It's the light coming. Okay, that makes sense.
Exactly, yeah. Now we're on the same page.
Yes. Okay, that's cool.
Yeah. And then the other bulletin I have, I've been seeing a lot about new robots ever since we talked about Boston Dynamics new robot last episode, maybe it was. I've seen like two more humanoid-esque robots show up on my feed. First one is from a company called Unitree. It looks exactly like the Boston Dynamics robot. You can go see a demo if you look up Unitree G1. They like punch it with a boxing glove and it doesn't lose its balance. And what else does it do? Oh, it like uses a soldering iron. I thought that was pretty cool. Unitree, actually, I don't know how, I've never heard of them before, but they beat previous speed records for robots, and they do backflips without hydraulics, which is pretty neat because previously, like, Boston Dynamics needed hydraulics to do that. And they also have dog-like robots. So if anything, they're basically copying Boston Dynamics product line.
Bro, like, we can buy one on Amazon. We can buy the robot. No, the robot dog's only 4,000.
Oh yeah, the new robot that's coming out is 16K, which is funny because Boston Dynamics has nothing about their new one on their website, but Unitree has price, specs, whatever, right there for you to look at.
This one's only 25. I think we should buy one, bro. 2,500. That's not bad.
I know. You look at one of these robots and you're like, man, 100K, right?
We'll have least. A new no. pet for the apartment.
Yeah, I'm down for it. And so one thing we would love to have in the apartment is a private chef, right? Well, introducing the Astrobot S1, it's built on a large language model, an AI. It was demonstrated doing like cooking and household tasks. Even when it was cooking, it would like flip the food in the pan and give it like, you know, the shimmy, you know, when you like flip it and then kind of give it a...
You know what?
So it's got finesse.
I bet it could cook.
Something I don't have in the kitchen.
I bet it could cook better than our other roommate.
Yeah, I was about to make the same joke, to be honest. And he's never going
to
hear this.
It won't make sense to anyone else, but just know it's funny.
Yeah, that's all I got, man. I'm passing it over to you.
All right. So one thing that just came out was a new stealth bomber was announced for the United States called the B-21 Raider, which if you're not an American listener, maybe this doesn't matter to you as much. But I guess the cool scientific kind of thing for this is the F-35 has a radar signature the size of a small bird. And so like a new stealth bomber that has similar technology is a pretty big deal considering the fact that this is definitely making advances in other types of science than just the defense world. So interesting stuff.
Yeah. Wait. So you were just saying that the new stealth bomber has like a lower, basically it's harder to detect because of it has the radio signature that's so small.
I guess I don't necessarily, they haven't said anything about the radar signature of the B-21 just yet.
I mean, I think in general, it'd be smarter to, if it's a stealth bomber, it's not to reveal too much information about it.
I'm sure it's going to be very small, similar size as the F-35, if not smaller. Then we have Boeing Starliner is going to attempt to launch again. This is attempted to schedule this launch multiple times. And they've had to scrub it a few times. So this is the first manned flight for the Starliner, which is Boeing's essentially version of the Crew Dragon. So the module that the astronauts are staying in when the ship is being launched and coming back to Earth. And it was delayed the last couple of times due to problems with the Atlas rocket that it was launching on. And then also the Starliner itself. So I know Boeing's trying to make some good appeal in the news. So this is a chance for them to do that as long as this flight goes well. So we'll see.
I feel funny because I think a month ago we were on the show and we were like, yeah, Boeing launching in like 3 days, you know? So
it's been delayed.
Make sure to look up. And now it's been 4 weeks and now we're saying the same thing again. But I think this time it's more legit. Last time it was skeptical. But yeah, launching like, I think tomorrow, actually, June 1st.
Well, tomorrow for us, and you'll already know the results of the launch for you guys. So.
Yeah, hopefully we're not, like, precursing. Is that the right word? Like, preceding a horrible event.
I knocked on wood.
Tomorrow?
So we're good.
Oh, me too.
Yeah, so we're fine.
Only other thing I had, actually, I mean, you mentioned SpaceX Dragon capsule, so I guess it reminded me. Right, so Starliner is the Boeing version of the SpaceX Dragon capsule. Did you see there was a piece of debris from a SpaceX Dragon capsule that landed on a park trail in North Carolina?
I did not see that.
What's funny is, so it's just like this giant sheet off of the trunk, which is basically a piece of the Dragon, you know, that holds cargo and stuff as they shoot it up into space, but also on its way down, they eject it or they jettison it. Now, the trunk can stay in orbit for a long time because it's jettisoned right before the reentry starts. And so it can come down weeks later after the Dragon has already touched down. You know, cool story. The space junk hits the Earth all the time. It's not something to be worried about. It's like one in a trillion chance. You're more likely to be struck by lightning. I think the cool point of the story, at least for me, was that I found a sweet new vacation spot that I'm definitely going to be going out to just from this.
From the pictures of this?
Just from this news article. Yeah. So it landed in a park. It's like a private luxury camping property with dome-style cabins on a mountaintop with like views of national forest. So
that takes us back.
I'll be heading
to
out.
If it's privately owned, that takes us back to the last episode, or the episode where we talked. That was the last episode, right? Where we talked about the outer space treaty. But who's drunk? Is it the guy who owns the resort, or is it SpaceX?
I don't know if like SpaceX has any claim to that stuff, but I do know that this resort is going to be putting it in like a glass case.
Cool.
To be honest, though, here's a little bit of a conspiracy. So if you look in the pictures, one thing to note is like the grass and the stuff around it is basically undisturbed. Like this thing landed and did barely anything. What if it got placed there just to get some
publicity,
like some publicity exactly for the resort?
Just like,
that would be pretty smart actually.
Yeah, but
torch some sheet metal and carbon fiber stuff and be like, space stuff. Anyway, guys, check out our new hotel on Airbnb.
I don't know. It seems, I mean, it would have had to like bounced a couple times. Like, obviously, this isn't where it like impacted.
Anyway, dude, let's roll into Brain Gain so we can start talking about the episode topic.
Let's do it.
I'm Dyson to talk about right. Dyson spheres. That wasn't that good. Hit me, Judd.
Okay. So I have two different things here. There's some quick space facts. So one of the planets rotates backwards. Do you know which one it is?
Venus.
It is Venus. But
let's go. That was a guess.
I think the more interesting thing about it is we don't really know why.
It's true.
So like some scientists say that maybe it was because of an impact early in its formation and it just started spinning that way because of that.
Set it spinning. Yeah.
But like, I feel like impact is the answer to like all of our unknown.
Everything.
Yeah. All of That's our funny. Unknown stuff yeah. with the planets. But it would be interesting to live there because the sun rises in the west and sets in the east.
Okay, so we don't know why Venus spins backwards, but does that also mean we don't know why the rest of the planets spin what we would call forwards? Maybe we're all weird and Venus has got it right.
That's interesting. This is the result of the initial rotation of the clouds and gas that condense to form the sun and planets.
Just seems weird that then it wouldn't be like closer to 50-50 where one spinning one way and one spinning the other.
Yeah. I don't know. But some planets, so getting into that, some planets spin at different speeds. So my next brain gains is the fact that a day on Mercury is twice as long as its year.
Oh my gosh. You mean the planet rotates once every two orbits around the sun?
It's rotating around the sun faster than it's rotating on its axis.
That's the kind of day that I need to get everything I want to get done.
Yeah,
done.
Real. That'd be awesome.
I don't know. I need one of those days, man.
The work day is 240 days.
So in the future, you know, you're getting stationed to Mercury, you know, for your out of space job. And they're like, yeah, so we work a 4-day work week. And they're like, oh, sweet, man. 4 days out of seven. And they're like, yeah, it's only 8 years, Mercury years.
Something, some small amount of time, you know.
Anyway, cool, man.
Let's get into Dyson Spheres.
Aren't you forgetting something?
Oh, right. Okay.
I've got some beautiful space facts.
Please.
I'm kidding. I don't. Mine has nothing to do with space. My brain gains. It actually has to do with women's buttons on their clothes.
Okay.
This may be a result of my ignorance as a dude who's never worn women's clothes.
Okay.
However, Judd, have you ever noticed that women's buttons are on the other side?
No, I have not.
Do you know? Take a guess as why they would be on the other side.
Is it what I think it is?
I don't know what you think it is.
I don't know. I want you to just tell me what it is.
Back in the olden days, wealthy women did not dress themselves. And because most people were right-handed, it was beneficial to their, like, servants to have the buttons on the other side.
Interesting. Okay. Okay, yeah. I forgot about your brain gains. I'm a bad co-host. But
no, it's okay. It's happened. Hey.
I was just itching to get into brain games.
I don't feel bad.
I was just itching to get it into Dyson Spheres. We're going to take a quick break before we get back into the next topic.
Yeah, let's hear about Dyson Spheres.
I guess to understand or to have a better idea of maybe why we want to build a Dyson Sphere or what a Dyson Sphere is, I think we first need to understand the Kardashev scale. So a Russian scientist named Freeman Dyson.
Wait, did you say Freeman Dyson?
Yeah, he did not make the Kardashev scale. I lied. That was the guy who made the Dyson Sphere. A Soviet astronomer named Nikolai Kardashev proposed the Kardashev scale. Should have known. Of course, it had his own last name. What was I thinking? He came up with this way to rank civilizations based on their energy consumption. I'll get into kind of what we're at later on, but he came up with three types. So type one means the civilization can fully manage the energy resources on an inhabited planet. Type two means they can fully manage the energy resources of a star. This is a Dyson sphere. Get into that later. And type three goes even beyond that, which is going to sound really crazy, but can fully manage the energy resources of an entire galaxy.
What is the human race?
Okay, yeah. So Carl Sagan decided to kind of quantify where we're at on this scale. So based on some equation that he came up with, we're currently at 0.73 on the Kardashev scale.
Rough.
I mean, yes and no. Like, I feel like I don't feel like we're able to use 73% of the energy resources that we have.
When did he give us 0.73?
That was in, like, I think it was 2011. It's on the Wikipedia.
Oh, okay. So it wasn't a long time ago.
This says in 1970, humanity used 10 terawatts of energy, but that's equivalent to only 0.16% of the power available on Earth.
What would get us to one, in your opinion? Like, what do you think we have to do to get to one from 0.7?
Yeah, and this was something that's kind of widely debated because there's a lot of energy that's just wasted in different ways. And we also capture, say, energy from the sun, but we're only, even the best solar panels only are able to capture 23% of the energy that, or turn the energy that they capture into usable energy for the
grid. And it's also like, you know, there are other energy things we're trying to adopt, like nuclear fission or nuclear fusion, right? Or I guess those are the first two that come to mind. But is that really energy of our home planet? Because those two things are kind of inherent to the universe. So does that, like, move us closer towards being a type two, you know?
Yeah, like, based,
like, you could do nuclear fusion in space.
That's a good question. I don't know.
Also, this scale is, like, clearly not linear, because if we've gotten to a 0.7 from what we've done now, I'm certain that it's gonna be harder to go from a 1 to a 1.7 than a 0 to a 0.7, you know?
Definitely. People have came up with numbers beyond type 3. There have been people that have said type 4, type 5, but those are just so far out there, I didn't even include them on this list.
And it's like, what's the point? Because I'm guessing one of those is like, what, capture the energy of the universe?
Yeah, and I don't even know.
Exactly, and like, clearly that hasn't happened, or at least not in a way that we've noticed. So like, what's the point?
Right. I want to just say quick, so like, type one, the creator of this scale said that he kind of expects us to reach type one in the next 100 to 200 years. So again, we don't really know necessarily what we are quantifying that as, but he said 100 to 200 years. Type two, he expected us to reach in the year 11,200.
To be fair, a lot of these theoretical physicists, a lot of these guys just like, there's no one that can prove them wrong on their numbers, but it's also like, I don't think they have enough information to make such specific guesses.
Yeah, and like people in sci-fi and even some scientists back in the day, like in the early 1900s, or for example, were saying that we would have flying cars by the year 2000, you know, so.
Yeah, I mean, good point.
These numbers are definitely off. And then he said type three, somewhere between 100,000 to a million years before we reach that.
Yeah. Again, so. It's like 100,000 to, do you say 100,000 to 100 million?
To 1 million.
Oh, to 1 million. Still, who's going to be able to, like, what does that even mean? Okay. Yeah, great. I'm not going to be here in 50, so.
How do you capture the energy of a galaxy? I don't know.
Anyway, let's jump into Dyson spheres. So, Judd, you said Dyson spheres kind of live in this type 2 civilization thing. We're learning how to harness the energy of the sun. Now, how are we harnessing the energy of the sun? Well, a Dyson sphere is a theoretical superstructure that would enclose a star completely or close to completely in order to capture the energy it emits directly. So Judd was saying, you know, a bunch of energy that reaches Earth is just from the sun alone. And so what better way to continue to collect that energy than straight from the source? This guy named Freeman Dyson, another theoretical physicist, in the 1960s, dreamed this up, and it came from a paper of his called The Search for Artificial Stellar Sources of Infrared Radiation. We'll get into what infrared radiation has to do with any of this a little bit later. But in the paper, he states that a civilization might, you know, encapsulate their host star so that they capture all of the energy emitted by the sun from visible light on the electromagnetic spectrum all the way down. Right. So everything that the sun emits from visible down on the electromagnetic spectrum could be collected. And then the sphere itself would radiate out waste heat in the form of infrared radiation. So more of why that's significant later. But
I just when you talk about enclosing the entire sun, I mean, how are we going to get daylight here on Earth?
I did think about that. It's like, what is that? And I think in a lot of pictures, it's like, it's never a full sphere, if you can imagine it, you know, but, and there's like gaps and holes, but still, I'd imagine if you covered up a significant portion of the sun, things would be different down here on Earth. But maybe at that point in the theoretical civilization,
doesn't matter.
We have ways to work around that to keep the Earth.
Well, the Earth, you know, is flat, so we just need one big light bulb in the sky and then we can replace the sun, so.
Now, Freeman Dyson, like I said, theoretical physicist, so another free thinker. He actually thought of a lot of other cool concepts, and he loved to name these concepts after himself, such as Dyson's eternal intelligence. This is the craziest one I read on his Wikipedia. I did not go to this Wikipedia for this purpose, but I'm glad I found it. It says, a means by which an immortal society of intelligent beings in an open universe could escape the prospect of the heat death of the universe by extending subjective time to infinity while expending only a finite amount of energy. Like, what does that even mean? He's just saying like, hey guys, imagine if we literally knew everything, couldn't die, and took over the universe and then coined it.
Sick.
And made time.
No one's going to remember that by the time that like could ever happen.
Yeah, if that ever happened, nobody's going to be like, oh, you know what? We got to give credit to Dyson. He came up with this. Like, who hasn't thought of something relative along the lines of, hey, imagine if we were immortal and the universe didn't end.
Yeah.
Also, some other interesting thoughts. Judd, he had something called the Dyson plant or what did you tell me about?
Oh yeah, the Dyson tree. This was an interesting thing. So he says a hypothetical, this is the straight from Wikipedia, a hypothetical genetically engineered plant capable of growing inside a comet. The plant may be able to produce a breathable atmosphere within the hollow spaces of the comet.
So it's like when we have Airbnbs on comets, these were the things that they'd install to create atmospheres to breathe.
Thus providing self-sustainable habitats for humanity in the outer solar system, analogous to a greenhouse.
And it's like, if you were really going to go to a comet and set up shop, your first thought isn't like, let's have plants grow the oxygen. You just bring it there yourself. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly. Because we have ways of turning, we already have ways of turning CO2 into oxygen, even though I'm sure a plant would be a lot better. I mean, no, it'd be cool. I'm all for it if we can figure that out.
Two more weird points from Dyson. First off is that he disagreed with the consensus in the scientific community on climate change. And he said that even though CO2 levels increasing is linked to warming, the scientists are not taking into the account the favorable effects of increased CO2. He says there's increased agricultural yields and that the positive benefits likely outweigh the negative effects. So he said that the simulation models we use for climate change aren't really accurate, which is crazy because point two for Dyson, he was the guy that coined the term, if you've ever heard this, green technologies. He coined green technologies. And the interesting thing is too, Judd, name something that comes to mind when you think of green technology.
Electric car, I guess, would be one.
Exactly. However, must have gotten lost in translation because he meant it as tech that's based on biology instead of physics, such as new species of microorganisms or GMO plants that are meant to meet human needs. And he's
Dyson trees.
Yeah, exactly. And he's like he was a heavy proponent of like genetically engineered crops. And he was like, if we get green technology out there, rural poverty's ending. Distribution of wealth is going to be better, whatever. He was out there dreaming.
He has an interesting thought process, I would say.
Dyson may have been pretty creative, to say the least. However, according to two new research papers that just came out, he may have been not that far off. All right, so we have scientists out there that are actually actively hunting for Dyson spheres within our galaxy. And the interesting thing about hunting for Dyson spheres is that it doesn't rely on a civilization wanting to contact us. So previous SETI, or search for extraterrestrial intelligence, relies on the fact that like these aliens would be out flying near us or coming near us or communicating to us, whatever, you know? However, if you have a Dyson sphere, you can't hide those signatures of its existence.
Okay.
Two astronomical teams, different astronomical teams, reported within a couple weeks of each other on detecting what are called the Dyson sphere candidates within our own galaxy. First was in March and second was in May. And between the two, 60 candidates were detected. Let's see, I think both studies were attempting to target non-young stars because I'll actually get to why that is important later. But so we've got 60 candidates out of the 5 million stars that they sampled within our galaxy. And they were using a combination of two telescopes, Gaia and WISE, and then something called TuMass, which is this giant map of all the infrared signatures in our galaxy, essentially.
When you're talking about signatures that you said earlier, you can't hide the signature of the star with the Dyson sphere. What's that signature?
Genius question, Judd. So I mentioned that waste heat from a Dyson sphere coming off as infrared. Now, the sun already emits infrared. However, when a Dyson sphere is around the sun and capturing all other bits of energy that the sun is emitting, you know, from that infrared up to visible light, when the Dyson sphere is there, it's going to create what's known as infrared excess in the astronomical community. And so these two telescopes and TuMass, the giant map of infrared, that's the information that they're providing to us, is all of the infrared signatures coming off of stars.
So these candidates that they found, they're saying there's too much infrared here compared to what we expect from this star.
Exactly.
Okay.
You're thinking 5 million stars. How the hell do they look at every single one of those? Well, they use what's called a neural network to basically, they feed it data from these telescopes, including the luminosity, so the brightness of the star, as well as the infrared energy. Basically, the information feeds into the neural network, and the neural network makes a guess. And then a scientist goes in there and corrects this neural network until it can start to get it right on its own. And then they kind of let it loose and let it hunt through all these millions of stars, and then they end up with these candidates. What's interesting is they both sampled 5 million stars, and one study only found 7, whereas another study found 53. So I can't tell you from my experience reading these papers why that difference would have popped up, but that's the biggest question I came out of this with. I lose trust in them because their results were so far apart, even though they're using the same telescopes, you know?
I'm skeptical because I think if a civilization can build a Dyson sphere,
yeah,
one, they should have spotted us by now. You know, we sent out that golden disc, you know, go pick that up and listen to it. Second off, if they can build the Dyson sphere, they can probably build a telescope, a 1,000,000x that's looking at me sitting at my desk right now, picking my nose, you know?
What about light years though? Right.
No, they figured out a way around that. I don't know how they did it, but they did it because they got a Dyson
sphere.
They
beat light speed. Yeah. I mean, fair enough. No, I thought the exact same thing. We'll get into like maybe how realistic a Dyson sphere actually is later. But the point is right now, we have information saying that there are stars with infrared excess. And you're thinking, you know, oh, a little bit more infrared. You know, we don't know everything about the physical features of stars and how they operate and, you know, what processes they might go through that might create more infrared. Well, that doesn't explain the fact that the difference is over 60 times more than what was expected of the stars for their size, distance, and age.
Interesting. Okay. Well,
that's a lot of infrared.
There's got to be something else going on here.
One reason that infrared might be increased naturally instead of a Dyson sphere is what's called a circumstellar disk, or also called an extreme debris disk. And I actually think one of the studies didn't officially declare they were looking for Dyson spheres. They're more looking for these extreme debris disks. Now, what does that mean? When a star is young and they've got lots of debris around them, they might have these protoplanets or actual planets that, you know, collide into each other and create a disk of giant rock, which is not dissimilar to, you know, the bands of a potential Dyson sphere. I really encourage you, if you're listening, to like look up a Dyson sphere so you can get an example of like what some of these technologies could look like. Sometimes they're like hexagonal panels surrounding the sun. Sometimes they're just kind of look like rings, essentially, like Saturn, that are flying around it. But anyway, so if you have an extreme debris disk, they might be pretty close and have a lot of rock, which could absorb the energy from the sun and emit the infrared, just like we would expect from the Dyson sphere. The interesting thing about that, though, is extreme debris disks are only expected of young stars. These candidates were specifically selected to not be young, and they're continuing to do research to prove their age. So
when I'm looking at these Dyson sphere, you know, plans or whatever, the different kinds of ones there are, I think there's one that makes maybe the most sense to me, which is kind of what you talked about with those hexagonal panels. But I think the one that makes sense to me is has these as mirrors. So they're mirrors that will reflect the energy into one central location, you know, not necessarily one for all of the mirrors across the planet, but you have clusters of them that point to one central location that can harvest the energy. And these are seen in the desert, in certain deserts.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say. Here on Earth, yeah, they have like a giant tower that collects light and beams it down onto solar panels.
Yeah, well, the solar panels, it's a mirror.
Yeah,
it's beaming it up to the pillar. And inside the pillar, there's molten salts that will collect they do a really good job of storing heat, and then they send it in boil water, I believe. And that, yeah, that makes the most sense to me because we've done it before, you know?
Yeah. You know, another reason why it may not be a Dyson sphere is that there could be something behind the star in the direction that we see it that is emitting infrared, such as a galaxy, and it's just lining up perfectly. You know, there's a 5 million sample, so it may happen in a couple instances where two things astronomically line up, and so we're reading two signatures when we think it's one. But I think I was reading that this is pretty unlikely, and also we could just watch these spots for 5 to 10 years and see if something appears. Not a long period of time, 5 to 10 years. I will say both of these papers confirmed they are not certain there is an existence of Dyson spheres just because of infrared excess. But what this does give us is potential candidates for further observations using other methods of SETI, or search for extraterrestrial intelligence, including looking for radio signals or even lasers, right? Lasers are one thing that are not naturally occurring and also are not subject to noise as much, like, you know, natural phenomena or whatever. They're going to come straight to us, and we can possibly catch them if we start looking at these positions in our galaxy. So
the other thing that I'm thinking of is, okay, we have this way to capture the energy at the sun. Are we just going to, you know, stretch a giant cable through space? How are we going to get this energy back? So we have to find a way to transmit energy, you know, through space.
Let's get into that actually right now, because I have so many reasons I could think of off the top of my head. Granted, you know, people in the 14th century couldn't even, you know, conceive of the idea of nuclear fusion. So
Right. There's
obviously things that we, you know, can't dream up right now. But I just think there are some literal barriers in physics that would prevent us from ever making a Dyson sphere. And my first one I want to mention is just the amount of material. You know,
right.
You look at these pictures and you're like, oh, just a couple metal bands, whatever. What we forget is that the circumference of the sun, even at the surface of the sun, you know, not in orbit, 2.72 million miles. And if you start to look at the size of some of the Dyson spheres in pictures, or the size of the Dyson spheres you'd expect to need to create this much infrared excess, that's like more material than exists on our planet. You know, we would need to be able to go harvest material out in the universe. And at that point, it's like, clearly we have technology. What do we need this energy for? Like, if we have enough energy to go outside of our solar system and go collect more material, we probably have outlived our need to just go collect really efficient solar energy.
Yeah, I'd agree. I think there's definitely a lot of barriers to get here. I think 11,000 years, estimated to reach this by the year 11,200, there's just no way.
The other thing I was going to say is the amount of time it would take, you know, because even if you could, I don't know, I can't see this ever being, even if we start at 11,000 years from now, are we really going to be able to complete something like this that fast? That we're, again, 2.72 million miles circumference, and we're going to go construct something and test it and verify it and build all this system around it. Like, it's going to be more than one lifetime. And if the world is anything like it is now, people don't care about things that don't affect them.
Here on Earth, we're caught up on issues that have zero, you know, importance in the grand scheme of things, in conflicts like that. So it's like, even if this was possible, we first have to get through the barriers, those kind of barriers first, to say, okay, now we're focusing our resources on building this Dyson sphere instead of fighting each other in war and things like that.
Yeah. So if we were an interstellar species, would you want to go visit aliens if you knew of some, right?
I mean,
I'm asking you personally.
Yeah, no, I'm probably going to die. I'm thinking like, okay, do we know what type of, like, are they better than us or are they worse than us?
Well, don't you think if we could go interstellar that we could also, you know, kind of observe them and figure out their threat level to us.
Yeah.
Point is, if you could build a Dyson Sphere, like, you know, imagine one of these candidates out there that we've spotted is an actual Dyson Sphere. If they were that advanced, wouldn't they have also probably figured out interstellar travel? If you had interstellar travel, why wouldn't you go visit us? I know I can. You can think of a couple of reasons why they wouldn't want to actually come down and interact with us, but I just don't know. I don't know. I feel like there would be more signs than if the alien is so worried about staying hidden, it would probably figure out a way to hide the infrared radiation that might be going. I don't know. I can think of so many reasons why there would be other signatures besides just this infrared excess.
Yeah, I don't even want to start getting into the thinking about how aliens would think. That's a big rabbit hole.
Maybe my final thought is the Dyson Sphere really the most efficient form of energy? If we figure out nuclear fusion, aren't we already bringing the sun down to Earth? You know what I'm saying? And I feel like in 11,000 years, like you said, we'd figure that out first.
Yeah, that could be achievable in the next 50 to 100 years for sure. Yeah,
exactly. Didn't we make a prediction back in our nuclear fusion episode where we both guessed as to how long it's going to take so we could go back and listen and find out?
I think I remember that. I don't remember what I said.
Anyway, man, we're landing up on 59 minutes and 30 seconds. After I cut out all the crap I said, I'm going to guess we landed about 44 or 45 minutes of beautiful content for our university listeners. So
they deserve it. We had a break. So,
and I guess two quick things before we wrap up the episode. If you guys have been listening to the last two, you'd know that starting next episode, university's got a new name. We are now officially going to be Pocket Science. And that comes with not only an awesome new name, new great name, you know, same great show. We've also got some brand new cover art that if you guys have been following along on Instagram, you've seen maybe a sneak peek of that. But I know a lot of you guys are excited for that. And we are too, you know, seems like such a simple change, but there is such a crazy benefit that we can actually get from that in terms of branding. Kind of hard to explain, but yeah, pretty sweet stuff. And, you know, what are we if not rocket science, but only pocket sized? Oh, and then another thing, if you guys are looking for some sweet new clothes, go check out shoppocketscience.com. Link will be in the description of this episode. But we've got sweet designs on there, hoodies, tees, sweatshirts, you name it. And I think all the way through July, we've got sales on our tees. So go check them out if you want a way to support the show. Literally all I have for the episode. Is there anything else you wanted to get to, Judd?
No, that's all I have. Do you have like a listener shout out and stuff like that?
Do I have a listener shout out, dude?
That's what
be
I thought.
Be real with me right now. Dude, this is crazy, actually. No, I'm going to read this one to round out our episode. Today's listener shout-out is from Camden Dierks. I really hope I'm getting your last name right. D-I-E-R-K-S. I'm landing on Dierks, Judd. What do you think?
Okay. Yeah, sure.
He's from Cedar Falls, Iowa, which is actually where I am right now.
Okay. You're just doxing yourself, all right?
Well, by the time this episode comes out, I'll be long gone. I'm on the move, okay. People. He says, I absolutely love this podcast. I have been listening for 3 months and I enjoy every topic you guys talk about. That's pretty sweet because even I don't enjoy every topic we talk about. I'm kidding. I picked the episodes, so I better. Special message. He says, AJ, whoa, actually this message is crazy. Now that I'm like reading this, hold on, let me wrap this text so I can actually read it. Okay, he says, AJ, I went to school with omit name person I know, and my girlfriend and I became better friends junior year. I think he's talking about high school. I heard about you after my girlfriend, omit name. I'm doing your favor there, Camden, in case you didn't get permission from your girlfriend. After blank was given a honors program leader and it was you. That is true. This person he's talking about was a honors student of mine. I love the podcast and can't wait to see what you guys will grow to become. Dude, me freaking too. What will we become? Time will tell.
Okay, yeah, this is so interesting. Okay, cool. You knew this guy. You knew this guy secondhand. Yeah.
Yeah. Or like a 1.5 hand, to be totally honest. No, secondhand. We could roll with that. Thanks for writing in, Camden. Again, that's Camden from Cedar Falls, Iowa. If you want to be like Camden, if you're an amazing listener with a great personality, I'm sure Camden's a good looking guy too, to be totally honest, if he's writing in on this podcast. If you want to be like Camden, you can do so by going to our Instagram and following us there. We post several opportunities to jump on the listener shout out, or you can just send us an email. That's universe.itypod@gmail.com. Go ahead and send us anything you want us to say on the show. Anyway, love to hear from you guys. I'd like to shout out T.O. From the UK. He makes our music. He does great stuff. So if you love our intro music and our break music, actually, we didn't have a break this episode. If you love our music, you should go check out T.O.'s stuff on Spotify. It's a good time. So all of the stuff is pretty sweet. And then I would also love to shout out our listeners in the Netherlands. It came upon me, Judd, that we have to start thanking our listeners in other countries, because you would be surprised. I mean, we went over this in our Spotify Wrapped, but we have so many listeners outside the US. We've got these little like groups, essentially, of listeners in all different countries around the world. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think the Netherlands is like our fourth biggest, actually.
I think we should pretend right now that we had a break earlier in the episode so people can listen to T.O.'s music. So I think we should just like say, okay, we're going to cut to a quick break, figure out what's next, and then like
genius.
We can just insert this somewhere else later. But we're going to keep it at the end too, so they know that we did this. We're going to take a quick break before we get back into the next topic.
Yeah, let's hear about Dyson Spheres.
Okay, perfect.
Dude, we just pranked them.
Natural. Come on. This whole show is a scam. We're actually both AI.
Oh, I see what you're saying. We're going to keep it at the end too.
Yes.
Okay. Well, you all got fooled this episode. Not only did you believe for a second that there are Dyson Spheres in our galaxy, come on. You also believed us for our break.
And our voices in general, we're AI. Anyways, do you have anything else to say before we wrap this up?
Me, I don't talk much.
I know.
That's the episode, people.
Peace.
Peace.